I learned this when I was in the heat of the moment of basketball. What I understood is even if we were in a high intense moment and everybody's going completely crazy, everybody's really mad, the pressure is really, really high. We just had to find one little small little positive thing that we can focus on as opposed to the thing that everybody's mad about. Expanding possibilities, the
mindset zone. I'm your host, Anna Malikian. And my mission is to support individuals and organizations to increase their impact while avoiding burnout. If you want to work smarter, not harder, I can help you. If you want to go from burnout to full engagement, let's talk. Reach me at anna@mindset.zone. Yes, instead of .com, it's .zone. You can also access all the episode notes, links, and other amazing resources at mindset.zone. Today, our special guest is Chris Toledo. Chris is a keynote speaker who helps organizations improve their cultures through dynamic and engaging presentations on the power of pussytosis. He's a former professional basketball player, a television host, and maybe you know him from the Red Book City Jam show or ESPN. So welcome to the Mindset Zone, Chris.
Anna, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited to be here.
And me too, because we had a very interesting previous conversation where you were telling me about when you were starting to pursue your basketball career, you realized that you could not grow taller. So you have a kind of a limitation there in terms of the basketball, but still you didn't give up. You decide to focus on what you could develop. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, so you're right. So Anna, since I was just a little kid, I just loved the sport of basketball. And it was just my passion from when I can remember 2 years old and on. That's what I loved the most. But on a good day, I'm 5'8". And so once I realized I wasn't growing any taller, I had to figure out a way to level the playing field. And what I discovered was, besides hard work and practicing and all that, besides all that, what I discovered, my way to level the playing field was my level of positivity. I learned that the more positive I was, the more the coaches loved me, the more the organizations loved me, the more my teammates loved me. So that was my way to level the playing field.
And you were successful because, as you say, you were in college, you play basketball in college, and you kept going from there. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah, so my first dream got realized when I got a scholarship to play basketball in college in Kansas, which I did. I loved it. And then my ultimate goal of playing professional basketball was realized when I got a chance to play in the NBA Summer Pro League in San Diego, California. And from there, they sent me to the Pro League in Mexico. So I played in the Pro League throughout Mexico for 4 or 5 years, and I played on their national team.
Because you are bilingual, so was a really easy transition for you.
It was a really good transition, and it also let me live in a different country. So I was able to see how different cultures, how they do basically the same thing. But I also realized that this theme that I was on of positivity, it crossed borders. It wasn't just for the United States, that the more positive I was internationally, the better it was for me.
And you became even the captain of the team, correct?
Yes, I was always the fan favorite. And so I was the captain of the team, and I was also the electronic media point person. So I did all of the media requests. So I started learning how to deal with media from a very, very young age.
And you really develop in the heat of the action how to leverage that positivity and how to keep the team, everybody in the team, in that positive kind of mindset.
Yeah, Anna, and that was really where a lot of my leadership development developed. So as a captain of the team, oftentimes I had teammates that were super mad. Maybe it was a big championship game and one of my teammates is going crazy. They're super mad. So it was my job to calm everybody down, sometimes even including the coaches. But typically I didn't have all day. We couldn't go to an all-day conference to do that. I had to do that within seconds. And so I started developing my ability to keep people under calm and control and keep them really, really at an even pace and a positive mindset in the moment.
And can you give us a story, an example of how you did that?
Yes. So probably the best example is when we were playing for the national championship. It was a national tournament in Mexico, and I was playing for Sonora, the state team. And one of and our best player, who was our big guy, he was just having a bad day. He had some personal stuff going on. And in order for us to win the championship, we really needed him on the court. But he came into the game already upset. He was mad already at everybody and everything. And so when we got to the critical moment of the game, he started going crazy. So I had to call a timeout, and him and I had a really, really quick discussion, and I was able to bring his energy back down to a place where we could play under calm and control. He ended up staying in the game, and at the very end of the game, he made the game-winning shot. We won the championship. Yes. Yeah.
That is seeing things in action, how it can work, is absolutely amazing. And what I absolutely love of your own story is that after you left basketball as a professional athlete, you really kept leveraging the play field in many different ways. So I know that you were invited to adding a sports program in Club Med. Tell us a little bit about that transition.
Oh, well, first of all, it was a beautiful transition. It happened so organically. So after my playing career was over, a moment that I really thought I was going to dread when all professional athletes' careers come to an end. And that was a moment that I really, really was dreading. But when it happened, I just had this sense of relief. And maybe on a higher level, I had a belief that there was more to my life, that was just the end of that chapter and something next was going to happen. But yes, I joined Club Med after my basketball career was over. Maybe 5 or 6 days later, I was on a plane flying to Eleuthera in the Bahamas, and I was appointed to run the sports program. But what happened, Anna, was when I got there, they realized that I could, first of all, I was bilingual, and they knew that I had the potential to learn my third language, French, which was the dominant language of the club. They also saw that I could relate to people. And what my job ended up becoming was, besides the lead entertainer, the MC, but I was a point person. I was a person that when everybody would arrive, I would be the one that would give them their welcoming. And I was the one that just basically kept the energy going out through the whole week.
Yeah, creating that experience, because a resort like the Club Med is all about creating an unforgettable experience for the guests. And you were one of the core people leading the way on that.
Yes. And fortunately for me, I worked on a team of probably, we had about 120 to 130 people on our team. And fortunately for me, we had probably people from maybe 60 or 65 different nations that were on our team. And so I was able to really access all these different cultures and their different thought process and add it to my own.
I love that, the multicultural there. And another interesting detail is that, you come from sports, from being a professional athlete. So the physical element was important for you. And then you start to bring dance into the mix.
Oh my God. So Anna, when I was growing up, I was what I called a closet dancer. My sisters were all great trained dancers. And so they were super comfortable dancing out at the dances and at the socials. But I really loved to dance, but I was really intimidated. But inside, I always had this love to dance. And so when I was at Club Med, they started putting me in the shows. And I started getting more comfortable performing on stage, dancing on stage. And I just fell in love with dancing, which is what I did with the next part of my career after Club Med.
Dad, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I just really fell in love with dancing. And so what I did was I knew I wanted to teach dance. And my goal was I wanted to just dance in one music video. So I told myself I needed to practice. So I took a job at this place called Rancho La Puerta, which is in Baja California, and I took a job there to teach dance. But basically, I took a job there so I could teach myself how to teach dance so that I could ultimately move to New York or to Los Angeles. So I spent 2 years there just focusing on my craft, really, really working on my craft. I went to New York. I got a job at the biggest place in New York. I went to Los Angeles. I got a job at the biggest place in LA, and I decided to move to Los Angeles. So I moved to Los Angeles, and a lot of it was timing, but also I brought a certain skill set. I brought something different, a street dance variety show. So I started teaching. Fortunately for me, right place at the right time. The right people came to my class initially. They wrote an article about me in the LA Times magazine. You know, and 2 weeks later, every single class from that point on was sold out in record time. And at about this time, I was getting a lot of recognition. So all of the shoe companies came at me. They wanted to sign me to an endorsement deal. And I decided to choose it to work with Reebok because they offered me my signature line of shoes and a signature line of apparel. And also they wanted to turn my program, what I called City Jam at the time, into a globally certified program, which we did.
I love that. And again, that multicultural, you always saw this say from being bilingual from the beginning to then all your basketball career and then in the Club Med, also that international flair of cultures. And then even when you transition from the music, the dancing to in the Reebok, you were, how do you say, taking that all over the world.
Yes, we're taking it all over the world. And fortunately, at about that time, getting a lot of recognition, ESPN, they came to us and they came to me and they wanted to turn my program into a television show. And at about the same time, Universal Studios in Orlando, they wanted to be a part of the deal as well, too. So we came to an agreement to turn my program into a television show. So we filmed it on the lot of Universal Studios in Orlando. Wow. And which, so now my message, instead of me having to physically be every place, my message was being beamed out to the whole world. It was ESPN2's number one run rated show from the very, very beginning for 2 years in a row.
Wow. And that is creative. Then you are living your mission. You are spreading positivity in a very active way. And at the same time, I bet that was a very fast pacing to be out there traveling and the TV show as a host. Yes, you have to own your skills in media, but also there is a price to pay there, correct?
Yes, there was a price to pay, a price that I was willing to pay. And what I felt like, so yes, and there was a lot of pressure. There was a lot of sponsors involved. There was a lot of people's work that were riding on the lines. And I felt like that was all on my shoulders. And so I felt, I did this for 5 years. And I got to the point, what really happened, Anna, was we were in Singapore. We were going to film an episode in Singapore, and I was in the back of a taxi, and it was really early in the morning, and I didn't arrive till really late the night before, so I was tired. We were driving by this park, and I looked over there. It was a little bit windy, and I saw all of these people in the park with these really cool costumes on. They're like silky looking costumes, and I didn't know what they were doing. And I asked the taxi cab driver to please stop, and he did. And I asked him what it was, and it was Tai Chi. And it was probably the timing as well, too, but it was just so beautiful and it just looked so peaceful. And so I was just mesmerized. And so from that moment, I told myself, okay, like this television thing is great. However, I feel like I have a new mission now. I want to switch what I'm doing. And so just exposing myself to that Tai Chi is what enabled me to get out of my contract.
I love, and it's an evolution. And I love that in terms of what you are doing today, in terms of helping organization and leaders, you know what is being in the pressure. You know where is being leading big teams and be responsible for a lot of responsibility in your shoulders. You can identify with that. And you can also find balance. And I love that you have these passion for learning, because when you decide to study Tai Chi, you really went all in.
I did. So I searched around and I found an older Chinese woman who decided to take me on to teach me Tai Chi. But one of the things that I loved, she was an older woman, is before she would teach me one move, she was assigning me all these books that I had to read on Taoism. And so I had to read them, and then she would ask me questions, and she would not give me the next book to read until she was satisfied that I actually read the book and I could answer intelligently questions about Taoism. So she really, before I did one move, she really developed my sense and my understanding of Taoism, which was just a beautiful, beautiful movement to me. And then I studied underneath her for about 2 years.
Wow. And again, your mission, I think it was always that spread of positivity, but evolve. And you decide to become a professional speaker and MC. So tell us a little bit again about that transition and what you are doing now.
So to backtrack just a little bit, towards the end of my Reebok career, when I was under the contract with Reebok, they were changing their logo. And so their logo, basically their identity. And so they knew that I had a global audience. So they started sending me back in the day all over the place to do presentations on their part to bring awareness to their new logo. And they are also looking for a new age group to come in. And so they tagged me as their global ambassador to head this group off. So I started speaking back in the day. But then after my Tai Chi experience, I felt, oh, okay, what I'm really passionate about doing now is being a motivational, inspirational speaker and emceeing events, and which is what I'm doing now. And I just love it. What I love about it, Anna, is it just feels like every step of the way of my journey really has added up to this.
Yeah, because you have that, all your background is incredible for even, I imagine, the events that have the luck to have you are an MC and a keynote speaker, because you understand the pressure that an event organizer have in their shoulders. You've been your background in TV is like you have an hour. Everything is counted, not to the minute, it's counted to the second.
And that's a really good point. So I understand when event organizers, they're trying to keep their event and they're trying to keep it on point. There's probably going to be a speaker after me, or if I'm the MC, it's my job to keep things moving. But what I learned in television, though, is everything is down to the second. Basically, every second is money. So when they told us we had a segment that was 3 minutes and 13 seconds, they didn't mean 3 minutes and 12 seconds or 3 minutes and 14 seconds. They meant 3 minutes and 13 seconds. And so learning how to be really, really super respectful with great time management skills goes back to when I was a basketball player as a point guard. As a point guard, one of my main jobs was to control the tempo of the game and to do time management.
Love it. I love how it's amazing when we look back from the point that we are at the moment and we look back and we see all the connecting dots that say something about that we are really living our mission at the moment and doing what we are supposed to be doing. And that feels very energizing, because now you are moving people through your spoken words to your facilitation of the events. And you came out with this, because positivity was always part of your life and one of the secrets for your success. But you came with this specific term, positosis. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah. So my trademark brand of positivity is called Positosis. And so the backstory to that is I have a younger sister who, when she was growing up, she had scoliosis. And I just remember that my back is fine. Like, I've never had any issues with my back, but just even at the mention of the word, my back would start hurting. And I would see my sister struggling with pain all the time. So I just thought, there's going to be a time that I'm going to be able to do something really good with this scoliosis thing. And so as I was in my mind figuring out what I was going to call my brand of positivity, scoliosis, positosis, scoliosis, positosis, it rhymed. And I thought, oh. And so originally, the original definition of positosis was the curvature of the positive perspective. And so that's what I was trying to do, in the right mindset, you can turn anything into a positive. Scoliosis, the curvature of the spine. Positosis, the curvature of the positive perspective.
Love it. And now you are even writing a book about this.
Yes, I am. So this is going to be the first book on positosis. This will be my second book. But yes, I'm very, very close to being finished on the book of positosis.
Yes. And you were already there on the road spreading this message and doing these podcasts to spread this message that is possible even in high demand, fast paced circumstances. We can develop, though, I like to call it the mental fitness to be more resilient, that of remain positive, even with all the setbacks that life throw us and that situation throw us, but we can develop. It's a skill that you can develop, and you are a great teacher of it.
Yeah, thank you. So my keynote that that I have been presenting is called the Positosis Mindset Reset and Remix. And so basically, it's about getting people to understand about the power of the mindset, as you very, very well know, and how to reset it and to remix it.
So can you just tell us a couple of things about it?
Yeah, so basically, the idea is to, first of all, identify a mindset that you resonate with. And in my case, I resonate with a positive mindset. And so to get that positive mindset and to train and retrain your brain, very, very simply, just to focus on the positive first, to scan for something positive in every interaction in that moment first. And then once you find something positive in that moment, in that situation, in that interaction, take that positive focus and move from there. And so that's how I learned this when I was in the heat of the moment of basketball. What I understood is even if we were in a high intense moment and everybody's going completely crazy, everybody's really mad, the pressure is really, really high, we just had to find one little small little positive thing that we can focus on, as opposed to the thing that everybody's mad about. We take that one positive focus, and then we take that focus and we go from there.
Wow, love it. And then what do you do with that? So that is the first phase. Correct.
So then we take that positive focus. And then in my presentations, then we talk about the steps basically to practice. So it's great. How first of all, we find the motivation. Once we find the motivation, why we're getting ready to do it, then we go to our visualization. We visualize it. We see it in our mind's eye. And then probably the most important part is to take that motivation, that vision, and put it into practice steps. And every single day, there's things that we can do. Momentum is a really, really big thing in what I do. And I have enough momentum that I could probably ride on my momentum for the rest of my life. However, I don't depend on my momentum. I feel like every single day I have to give my positive mindset. I have to give my positosis. I have to give the energy. I have to give it fuel to keep the momentum rolling.
Love that. Really love that. And you are walking your talk on this. That is even more inspiring. So where can people learn more about you and the work that you do?
Well, so probably the best place that they could learn more about me is at my website, which is positosis.com. If you go to YouTube and you just type in my name, there's about a million things right there. There's a lot of presentations and a bunch of different stuff, a lot of television shows that I appeared on back in the day. So they can do that. But if people are trying to contact me, the best place that they can contact me is at Chris Toledo, the number's 360. @gmail.com. ChrisToledo360@gmail.com.
And I will make sure to put all these in the show notes at mindset.zone, because I think I'm really looking forward to reading your book and to see you even doing more that ripple positive effect out there, that creating these experiences and the work that you are doing in the keynote and with organizations, transforming the culture for this more positive angle. It's so important. We so need this in our culture here in the United States, corporate America, and even internationally. And you have all that international background to help you too. So thank you so much for being here at the Mindset Zone.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And just like always, our conversations they just feel so good. I appreciate you, Anna.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening, and remember to follow this podcast. And if you're listening in Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. That really helps us spread the word about the Mindset Zone. Also, visit mindset.zone. Yes, instead of .com is .zone. There you can find amazing resources and more information about my speaking and how I support purpose-driven individuals and organizations increase their impact while preventing burnout. As always, I'm so grateful you are here. Expand what's possible for you, for the ones around you, for the world.